I'm doubly happy to be here this morning. Yesterday, I went to Beatitude's house and visited Tenzi and Dennis. And following that, because it was the first Monday of the month, I went and to Vandenberg to do the protest with Mary and Tenzi. And we're standing there. Tenzi couldn't be there, but Dennis was. And we're standing there, so Dennis gives us a whole history of when they started doing the protesting. And then he says, well, at any time now, they should be coming over to check in on us, to check us. And hopefully they won't arrest us today. I said, oh, there's a possibility of that? So then my mind starts conjuring up, well, if they come to arrest me, I can always say, I'm sorry, but I have another commitment tomorrow morning. There's no way I can be there. And then I thought, well, if they jail us, I'll have to find somebody to post bail so I can be here. But fortunately, no one came out, and he explained that it really depends on who the commander is. And the commander at this particular time is someone who isn't as inclined to come out and arrest those who are protesting. It was a very humbling experience to stand there and realize the power of 1-4-6, how a group like that can be so threatening to an institution is extremely unbelievable for me. But this morning I'm here not to talk about that. I'm here to talk about Chapter 3, the God Management System. Isn't that a wonderful title? God knows we've never attempted to manage God, have we? Especially in the Roman Catholic Church. But there are two quotes from the chapter that challenged me, and I've written my presentation in response to these quotes. The first quote that challenged me is, we want to use God to grow our religions. I don't have the page on that, I'm sorry. But God won't let us. And slowly, without noticing it, we have become our own greatest burden. God is about the world. God is about life, the whole of life. It's not all about you. It never has been, and it never will be. And the second quote that fascinated me was this. Jesus repeatedly said, the kingdom of God is here. Enter it. Jesus never said, Christianity is here. Join it. Christianity is a religion. The kingdom of God was, is, and always will be more. I don't know about you, but reading this book and hearing the presentations about this book has been a very freeing experience for me. It confirms an ever-growing belief within me that we are at a very privileged time in history. Christianity is changing. We can now begin to experience and entertain a new vision of this emerging paradigm. The late Marcus Borg has called this the transformation-centered paradigm. In a sentence, it sees that all of Christian life is a relationship with the divine that changes us, that transforms us. Anne Squire made a brilliant statement in her chapter, Radical Inclusion, in the book, The Emerging Way. She was quoting Don Cuppett, who said, what Jesus preached was the kingdom. What he got was the church. So let me begin again with that first quote. God is about life, the whole of life. It's not all about you. It never has been, and it never will be. For me, knowing it's not about me is very hope-filled. But at the same time, it forced me to once again re-examine my motives for being ordained a Roman Catholic woman priest. What Tom says is true. The calling came from below. But at some point, I had to say yes. So what was my hope in being ordained, and what were my motives? When you read literature about Roman Catholic women priests, you'll read their hope and vision. The website says, Roman Catholic women priests are at the forefront of a model of service that offers Catholics a renewed priestly ministry in vibrant grassroots organizations where all are equal and all are welcome. It goes on, the voice of the Catholic people, the Sensus Fidelium, has spoken. We women are no longer asking for permission to be priests. Instead, we have taken back our rightful, given, God-given place, ministering to Catholics as inclusive and welcoming servants, priests. That's quite a challenge, isn't it? I've been ministering to the Catholic Church of the Beatitudes for just about 7 years now. And I ask myself the same question. What does this all mean? Servant priesthood and inclusivity. Anne Squire defines radical inclusion as the practice of including in any community those who are normally excluded. She posits that radical inclusion demands that membership in the community be open to all. And we believe that we are attempting to practice radical inclusion in our Beatitude community. But are we? I know there are some who would say no. They have felt excluded. And according to Samir, perhaps these are the folks we need to be talking to. Perhaps they are the ones that can tell us how we could become more inclusive. And does radical inclusion protect us from becoming a God management system? What keeps us from reduplicating what we left? Being a clinical psychologist, I'm well aware of the repetition compulsion complex. We marry our mothers, we marry our fathers, etc., etc., etc. So I had a fear from the beginning of my ordination that unless we acted consciously and deliberately, we could so easily fall into a hierarchical model of thinking and acting without even being aware of it. What will keep this fledgling organization from doing this? I remember as I was in the process of discernment and studying, I voiced my concern like this. Who are we to think that one day we may become what we most hated in organized religion, becoming hierarchical and thinking that our way is the right way? I shared my concern with a group that I've been meeting with for over 12 years, and someone wisely said, Suzanne, always include the laity in all your different levels of organization. They will not let that happen. And believe you me, that is true. And after hearing Samir a couple of weeks ago, I became aware that the idea of including the laity in different levels of organization is tantamount to welcoming the stranger. For the laity has indeed been strangers to the hierarchical structure, haven't they? At least in the Roman Catholic tradition. Now, organizational theorists remind us that to reform an institution requires more than just rearranging the organizational chart. It requires a change in culture, of what we Christians call a spiritual conversion. What spiritual conversion are we asking ourselves and our fledgling congregations to make? From our very beginnings, the Church of the Beatitude chose a contemplative style, liturgy, and prayer. One of our goals, I would say my primary goal, was to create a liturgy that would be a transformative experience. Many in our community are daily meditators, and we see this as essential to carry out the many works of justice that we are engaged in. It's a good first step. But is it enough? I have been watching with curiosity and hope the many small communities growing around our nations and around our world. Many are Eucharistic communities. And I note that next year, I'm thinking it's in Arizona, but it might be in Portland, I think, there will be a meeting. Every 10 years, the Eucharistic communities from around the United States meet and have speakers and have an opportunity to share what's been going on in their communities, and that will occur again next year. What they all seem to have in common is an ardent desire for a community-based experience, a liturgy that is truly inclusive and truly prayerful. According to Beatrice Boutreau, the chief paradigm in today's world is one of domination, exploitation, accumulation, and force. Looking around, we see that the world is divided into winners and losers, top dogs and runts. Or as Eknath Erwarren once put it, most of us suffer from the mistaken belief that it is in grabbing that we receive. It is venting anger that improves our relationships. And it is in having our own way that we find fulfillment. In contrast to this paradigm of dominance, Beatrice Boutreau posits the communion paradigm initiated by Jesus on Holy Thursday. Through the acts of foot washing and Holy Communion, Jesus sent forth a second creation. Throughout his ministry, Jesus broke down the boundaries between the righteous and the unrighteous, the rich and the poor, the diseased and the healthy, the social authorities and all people. In Bruto's eyes, Jesus offers to all his unconditional positive regard when he says to his disciples that he no longer calls them servants, but friends. So what does a small Eucharistic community hope to espouse? Tom mentioned, and it's true, that the St. Anthony community has been faithfully gathering every Sunday since Vatican II. I've been asked to preside at their community a couple of times, and I can give testimony to their sense of community and support of one another. I walked into that community to preside, and that sense was palpable. You know, when you're with them, that these people have grown together over a number of years. I suspect what small communities are struggling to do is to provide shelter and nurturing for those who are undergoing or have undergone a process of transformation that is pushing them into another culture of spiritual awakening. Realizing that mainline churches no longer feed their deep desires for ongoing transformation, grassroots communities are forming to fill this need. When someone comes to visit our community and leaves and says to me, "I felt so fed tonight, my heart sings." Because that's what I hope we can offer, a spiritual feeding, so that if people choose to come and attend, they leave having felt something of a spiritual feeding. Let me share again Boutreaux's vision. She says, quote, "Jesus gathers people into communities in which the mutual recognition as children of God is the foundation for social interaction, and the social feeling is mutual affirmation. In the community, each person does the same thing that Jesus originally did, loving another person with one's whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. Jesus and his friends support each other in the work of healing or mending the world. To do this difficult and important mission, Christians are challenged to move to a place beyond competition, beyond comparison with others, to a place where people belong to each other, a place of caring and sharing, of unstinting generosity. Most importantly, it is a place where we can acknowledge and honor the divine in others." Thomas Keating says this about our changing Christianity. Quote, "A global Christianity must be based," he says, "on the practice of servant leadership, rooted in an established contemplative practice, and adapted by each denomination to its own particular circumstances and theological traditions. It must be open to partnerships with the spiritual disciplines and traditions of other religions, and include in the dialogue scientists and people of no religion." Sound a little bit like what Samir was talking about? Thomas goes on, "Contemplation, when fully developed, is the highest realization of the unity of science and religion. It is the science of love. I truly believe that is our hope in the Church of the Beatitudes. But grassroots communities must continually challenge themselves to avoid falling into the pitfall of becoming what they once knew. Perhaps Samir's warning that it's not all about you, it is what will keep us from going down that slippery slope. Now, what I would like to do for the next 15 minutes is to have you in your groups, and I have a couple of questions for your discussion. Answer one or two questions of two, or you can answer both if you'd like. Discuss the experience of realizing that God is not all about you. How has this insight transformed you, and how has it challenged you? Or, if you prefer, you may discuss the perceptions, your perceptions of the changing paradigms in Christianity. And it is 10:30. We will stop at about 10:45 so that we can have just a little more input before our break. Three more minutes. 3 more minutes, so if there's somebody at your table who has not yet had a chance to speak, please let it be open for them. You have 3 more minutes. All right, if we could come back to a place of quiet for a moment. Okay. All right. Before our break, I just want to get into a little bit with the second quote that I chose, which is Jesus repeatedly said, "The kingdom of God is here." The kingdom of God, oh, that's better. The kingdom of God is here. Enter it. And Jesus never said, "Christianity is here, join it." Christianity is a religion. The kingdom of God was, is, and always will be more. What is this more that Samir explores in this quotation? Many authors are attempting to write about the difference between Christianity as a religion and our search for the broader meaning of the kingdom of God. One of the authors that is attracting me at this time in my own personal history is John Philip Newell. His new book, The Birthing of God, is absolutely stunning. I think a couple of you had the opportunity to go to when he was here a couple of weeks ago, and I think that was his topic. Now, Newell has been working with I went to his first weekend, was that last fall, and he was sharing with us that every year he would take a month to meet with a rabbi, a friend, they had become very good friends, and an imam. And they were trying to come together to explain or come up with what an experience of the kingdom of God that would be beyond all religious traditions. And it's very interesting to me that one of the outgrowths of these meetings is a music tape of chants that blend all the elements of each religious tradition. I'm going to begin the second half of our presentation by playing one of these chants because I want you to hear it and experience it. It seems that our soul's deep yearnings often well up when music evokes ancient memories of our communal heritage that rests peacefully within each one of us. Last week, someone brought up the experience of being at Taizé, where the chants were sung in so many different languages. I know when we at the Church of the Beatitudes decided to have a Taizé service monthly, it was done with an intent to bring people of all creeds or no creed together to pray for peace. We do a Taizé service on the second Sunday of every month at the First Congregational Church on State Street. And the Taizé service was an idea born in a desire to do something, to pray for peace, really. But it was carried out by a young couple we met who had been to Taizé for an extended period of time. And they were left with the desire to create a Taizé experience wherever they lived. We had the good fortune of meeting these two individuals at the opening of an art show of a friend of ours. And how the subject of Taizé came up, I would never be able to tell you. We sit back. We just had a meeting a couple of days ago. And we were sitting back in wonderment at why at an art show we would be drawn to one another and why the conversation of Taizé even came up. But that evening, a Taizé committee was formed. They were so excited, and we had no idea how we would evolve this. But we have, and we've been gathering on the second Sunday of each month for a year and a half. Our experience is that it's a truly contemplative experience. You're all invited to join, and I really don't think you'll be disappointed. I think you would enjoy it. On that table over there, we have some explanation of Taizé. We have cards that will tell you when it meets. We also have literature about the Church of the Beatitudes. So before we get, is it okay if we take the break early and come back early? Will you come back? I've been here, and I know how hard it is to get you back. If we break early, can we come back early? Okay.